Time for Windows Weekly. Mary Jo Foley has the week off as she travels to Barcelona for Tech Ed next week. Paul Thurrott is here. We'll talk about the latest updates to Windows 10, the technical preview, stuff Satya says, and a look, believe it or not, at a version of cloud, a version of Azure for your very own home. Well, if you've got a little bit to spend. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 385, recorded October 22nd, 2014. President Spacey. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free two-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Windows. And by Citrix ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with Citrix ShareFile. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Go to ShareFile.com, click the microphone, and enter Windows. And by Lynda.com. Lynda.com is an easy and affordable way to help you learn. Instantly stream thousands of courses created by experts on business, software, web development, graphic design, photography, and more. For a free trial, visit lynda.com/windows. That's lynda.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly. Yes, sirree. The show where we cover Microsoft and its amazing a story of growth, rebirth, and flight, the phoenix of the technology world. Here to cover it, Mr. Paul Thurrott from the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. Mary Jo Foley has the week off, but it's, you know, this is like old times. We did this show just you and me for many, many years, and I like it.
Yep. I should get my brandy sniffer out.
Hello, Paul.
Hello, Leo.
How are you today? I've got a cruller and a cup of coffee, so.
Yep.
It's a morning show for me. You have an afternoon show. You can drink.
I wish that was true.
Don't let me stop you. So we have had a busy week, much to talk about.
Yeah, it's actually, I'd say the past couple of weeks have been crazy. It seems like it kind of started with that San Francisco trip, and then it hasn't let up. You know, it's been
wasn't
a lot
there
of
an
stuff.
Event this week in San Francisco? A cloud event, right?
If you thought I was unhappy with going to San Francisco for that Windows thing, you can't even imagine what I would have been like after this thing.
So you punted. Was there any important news out of that?
Yeah, but it was all enterprise related. I have a little. I have part of this as my enterprise pick.
All right. Well, so we could save that. So normally Mary Jo likes to cover. Let her cover the B2B.
I thought I'd throw in a couple of Mary Jo type things here just to.
When she's not here, we really like to stick to things like Call of Duty.
Yep. We are going to discuss Call of Duty.
Yes, good. I can't wait. But let's start off with the Windows 10 technical preview. There was an update got pushed out.
Yeah.
Added one of those features that they were pushing.
Right. I had heard this was coming late in the week, which would have been great timing for me. And then all of a sudden, it just kind of happened yesterday. It was really bad timing. So whatever. I mean, I started downloading it on all my PCs and everything. And they pretty much telegraph the main features that are in there, although all of them are in some way incomplete in their current form. So the Notification Center, actually, I just noticed my Notification Center has notifications finally. I should take a picture of
that. So that was one of the things that they really touted in Windows 10. But it didn't work in this first coming.
Yeah. Yeah, because of the way that the Windows releases were staggered before, the Action Center, Notification Center, debuted first in Windows Phone and Windows Phone 8.1. And so the version we see in this build is an early version. It only has application and system notifications, and there's more stuff coming later. It's really basic looking. When you see it, it's just a plain white panel with not much going on. Mm. You can clear all the notifications now that I'm looking at it. I am curious if I click on an actual email if it goes to that email. It does not. And so you can see it's not, you know,
it's not fully wired up yet.
Yeah. And, you know, shocker, whatever.
Right.
I would say that's the one actual major new feature that's in there. I mean, there's some other things. There are animations on the windows, which I find kind of annoying, frankly. There's the starts of some other Windows Phone features. Battery Saver, Data Sense, Storage Sense will be in there, another Windows Phone feature. But in some ways, like the most interesting thing that's going on with this build is how this changes the way we'll be updated going forward. And they provided some details about how that process works and how, you know, it can work in the future. And I actually don't know that I linked to this in an intelligent way, but in the article that I have that is about Microsoft Delivers First Update to the Windows Technical Preview, there's a couple of graphics in there about what they call rings. And it kind of works the way Chrome does, where there's a kind of a canary branch or ring, as they call it. They have an operating system group ring, which is like the next set of users that get builds internally to Microsoft. And then they have all of Microsoft. And so there's these three rings that are internal to Microsoft that determine how quickly they, you know, the people within those rings get builds. And then outside of Microsoft, at least for the consumer slash client version of Windows, they're going to have, well, right now they have a Windows Insiders ring, right? But there's going to be a fast ring and a slow ring. And so by default, everyone's on slow. But if you want to get the updates as they're released, and it's not clear if this means individual features or rather completely new builds, but you can switch that to fast and you'll be on a slightly faster track than you would be otherwise. And so I think this is a look at how they're going to service people in the public when this thing goes live in non-preview form, because obviously some businesses are not going to want to deploy, you know, Windows updates immediately. And this is maybe a little clue of at how that will work.
What else? What else is new?
Yeah, I mean, that's honestly, it's funny because that's kind of most of it. Microsoft mentioned there were over 7,000 improvements in this build. I call that kind of like Apple math, you know, like this new version of Apple's whatever operating system.
8 million new features. Yeah, 7,000.
Yeah, so there's a new font kerning thing and you know, whatever. But honestly, there isn't really much more. I haven't tried this on a I've installed it on a touch device. I haven't done much with the touch. But my understanding is there's a few touch features too I haven't really gotten to. If you're familiar with how Windows works on a tablet today, Windows 8, you know that if you swipe down from the top of the screen or if you swipe up from the bottom of the screen, it activates the app bars, right? You can have a command bar at the bottom. You can have a navigation bar at the top. Or you can have one or the other. You know, you don't have to have both. But in the new build, apparently, when you swipe down from the top, it actually brings up the new title bar on the window that has like the close and the minimize and all that kind of stuff. And that's nice because before that, user interface was not available to touch. You had to have a mouse, you know, to access those controls. And so you can see how kind of the beginnings of how they're going to support that kind of UI on touch. But I haven't played with that yet. So I'll have to, you know, find the time somehow today. I don't know.
Are you jaded? Are you crazy. Burned out on Windows, Paul? Are you not? I mean, most people
No.
Let's get in there and see what's new.
No, I'm actually really excited about this. This kind of thing is very energizing to me because I would say over the past couple of years, I've had this kind of troubling feeling about Windows and the whole touch thing and these devices. And, you know, I think a lot of people have misunderstood my perspective on this because I've, you know, pragmatically have said to people, look, they've really telegraphed that this is the future.
Yeah.
Mobile devices are the future. PCs are kind of going away. The desktop's going to go away on these devices. And I think people have heard that and said, oh, Paul likes devices. He wants PCs to go away. And that's not the case at all. In fact, I've really struggled with it because I, you know, for Windows 8, even Windows 8.1, especially, I prefer to use it on a laptop that doesn't have a touch screen or doesn't have a screen that pops off and all that stuff. Like I use that stuff and I get it. But honestly, when I'm working, it's a screen and a keyboard and I want to type. I don't want to swipe and do that stuff. I mean, I don't mind if it's there, but so, you know, Windows 10 by, you know, kind of re-embracing that environment to me is a hugely positive step because I really do fall into that crowd. And it's a big crowd. It's, you know, I would say out of the 1.5 billion people using Windows, it's like 1.4 something billion. It's a big, big crowd of people. And I'm part of it. And so I look at this stuff and I think, great. And I mean, even now in this rough form, I prefer this to Windows 8.1.
Wow. And I find myself saying a lot. That's saying a lot.
Yeah. Well, because it's like, you know, Windows 8, you know, 8 whatever, 8 version whatever, it was so scatterbrained. It was like two personalities fighting with each other. Mm-hmm. And like a lot of people, I was really aggravated by the fact that these kind of metro UIs would get in the way on top of the desktop when I was trying to do other things.
Right.
And just running, being able to run those apps on the desktop. And I honestly, I could not care less how it works technically. I you know, people... Well, Paul, they're not technically running on the desktop. Yeah. I don't care.
That's
the fact that these things...
whatever's behind the scenes is irrelevant. It's what you see.
Couldn't care less. It could be gnomes on treadmills. I don't care.
It's made by elves.
Look, these things run in Windows side-by-side with desktop applications, side-by-side with Adobe Air applications, web applications... I already said web applications. Whatever. Whatever kind of applications. Beautiful. That's what
I
want.
Beautiful.
So, I like it.
Good. And it's stable enough and productive enough to use as your desktop.
I always have to give that caveat. If you are out there in the world and wondering if this is this good enough, should I do it? If you're asking that question, maybe not. You know, it is for me, and I haven't seen any major weirdnesses. I mean, even in this build, which has a few other issues. I mean, to me, it's fine. If you're really worried about this stuff, though, if the thought of wiping out, you know, one of the big questions again, in fact, I would say right now it's the number one question, is if I install this build now or some preview build now, will I then be able to go and update at some point to the final release? Or will I have to, in fact, blow away that system and start from scratch? And the answer is we don't know because Microsoft refuses to discuss that. I don't think they know. I think they would prefer for people to do the start over from scratch thing, but I also think that it's probably going to work just fine.
In the past, they've made people do that, haven't they?
In the past, actually, what they've said is they don't support it, but the truth is it's almost always kind of worked.
Oh.
And I know of many people, and I've had many machines where you kind of upgraded, and suddenly you run the live public version, and everything was fine. But you can't make promises like that. And I have to go back to that same thing, which is if you're asking this question, if this is seriously a concern for you, just don't do it.
They probably don't want to be committed to, technical solution that they don't, you know, they don't want necessarily support. Yeah.
Personally, I don't care. I mean, I blow these things away all the time.
Right.
I do it for fun, Leo. Sometimes.
No, me too. Do
during commercials when I'm watching TV.
Yeah. Or when I'm doing a show, as you may remember. Yeah.
Yes.
No problem.
Yep.
Let's just erase the whole thing.
Absolutely.
Start over. No, in fact, I wish people were more inclined to do that because it fixes a multitude of problems and it's not a bad thing. And once you've done it a few times, you don't get freaked about it. Of course, you have to have good backups and that kind of thing. But
this is another thing. Unfortunately, it's very strange because this coincides with another thing that I see a lot of. And I sort of equate this with the enterprise business mindset, although there obviously are many people out in the world who also have this mindset, which is, people don't trust and or I think understand cloud computing. And there's a lot of technologies in Windows in particular where you can have all of your documents, all of your pictures, all of your data of any kind in OneDrive.
Right.
You assign those OneDrive folders to libraries in Windows and use them seamlessly. They sync to the cloud, et cetera, et cetera. You know, OneDrive obviously has amazing sync capabilities and is the thing through which you buy apps and games and subscribe to Xbox Music Pass and do all this stuff in Windows. You know, to me, using a Microsoft account in Windows 8 is not just natural, is the only way that you should interact with that system. I don't understand people who are against that kind of thing. But those are also the people who aren't doing that sync stuff that I'm talking about, that think that by putting stuff in the cloud, it's only available in the cloud, and maybe I need to be online to access my data, and that is unacceptable. It has to be on some hard drive. And those are the types of people who are going to have trouble blowing away their system because the truth is you've got this finite thing. It's inside your computer. It has everything that's important to you on it. And if you blow that thing away and make a mistake, it's gone. And so they're less likely to do it. But when you're putting everything in the cloud, none of that matters. It's all synced. It's everywhere that you want it to be, you know? So I have, you know, the data that's important to me is in the cloud, the master part of it. But parts of it are on this laptop, parts of it are on the Surface Pro 3. A lot of it's on this desktop computer. But if the hard drive here dies, I'm not losing anything. It's all synced. It doesn't matter. So
Yeah, and that's, I think, the modern...
Face the cloud, please, anybody. Way,
yeah,
maybe, you know.
Let's see. Somebody in the chat room said, reluctant WP user, I think, said...
reluctant.
Okay.
My favorite kind.
Yeah, let's not take that too personally.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was reluctant to say his name. But that reluctant WP guy said that Windows 8 was, you know, that as you said, that hybrid between touch and desktop. And then Windows 8.1 was kind of this kind of reluctant concession to kind of make it a little bit easier to use. But Windows 10 is basically desktop. Is that fair? No, there's still touch in there.
No, right. I mean, we're mostly seeing the desktop stuff. I think it's a fairer thing to say that they've taken the next logical step. So if you think about Windows 8.1, Windows 8.1 Update 1, you know, they added the title bars to the Metro windows, made it a little more usable with the mouse. They made concessions on the start screen as well. But, you know, Windows 10, you can run those things in Windows. And now having a title bar in the window frame makes more sense because now it's a floating window and you're going to access it as you would normally other apps. And
yeah.
I don't think that's a complete... turnaround. I think they were clearly heading in this direction, but this is the, you know, kind of the culmination of bringing the sanity back to Windows, because Windows 8 was this crazy Frankenstein's monster.
So people should update. You recommend it, and how do they update?
Yeah, so there's a new interface for updating. If you were on the technical preview already, or if you got it today, you still go back and get the initial build, and so. You actually get the update through a different interface. It's not Windows Update, although you can find it in the same place in PC settings. And so if you go into Update and Recovery, instead of going to Windows Update, there is a Preview Builds interface. You click the Check Now button. It tells you there's a new build. You install it. There's not a lot of information about how long the download's going to take, how big it is. It's actually about 2 to 2.7 gigs, depending on the version, depending on x64 versus x86 and so forth. I would say the install was fairly slow. It could take up to an hour, and it reboots your system. It does most of it offline, you know, meaning not while the OS is running, obviously. And, you know, you boot back in, you sign in, and you're pretty much up and running. It's, you know, I don't want to get too far into the woods here, but technically speaking, I think this is really a migration, not an in-place upgrade, because a lot of settings are reset to their original values. I think that might explain part of the time element too, because when you do a migration, you know, behind the scenes, Windows is actually moving your settings and apps and data over to a new temporary partition, you know, clean installing the OS and then blowing everything back. And, you know, that takes a little bit of time. It doesn't really matter, but you may find if you've made some certain custom settings, but not others, not all of them, probably the ones that aren't synced, frankly, that you might have to go back and change some settings. I noticed that my the sites I have in compatibility mode, and i.e. were reset, you know, things like that.
That's a little annoying.
But you're testing software, so, you know, things aren't going to work. It's okay.
Right.
The other thing is, this is the deal
you make.
Yeah, I mean, this is right. So the other thing to do once you get back into the OS is go into Windows Update this time, and you'll see an update. And it will say, I don't remember the name of it, but the name is something along the lines of update for the Windows Technical Preview. Install that. You're going to have to reboot. This one's only going to take about 10 seconds, but this will solve a lot of reliability and stability issues that are apparently present in this build, including in some cases, I've not seen this, but I guess there's a weird effect where text on screen is missing every other character. So if you see that problem, and you'll notice it right away, install that update, reboot, and come back. You'll be fine.
Great.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take one more thing.
Yep.
This is kind of an interesting story. Microsoft plans to eliminate passwords.
Yeah. And you know what? I don't do this now because you'll fall right asleep, but if you're ever in need of some kind of brain exercise, go read the original blog post about this topic that Microsoft wrote. It is amazingly dense, and it reads a lot like the type of thing the Windows 8 guys used to write, you know, when they had those crazy blog posts.
Yeah. Steven Sinofsky, guest author.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I tried to reduce this down to plain English. The truth is, this is a big topic, and they're not providing a lot of details about how this stuff is implemented. And in some cases, I don't think they do a good job of making it clear which of these features will only impact businesses, which will impact both businesses and consumers, you know, that kind of thing. But the basic deal is that I think today most people with Microsoft accounts probably don't have two-step authentication turned on, and they should. And it's something I've written about and talked about a lot in the past. But if you think about kind of the threat environment out there in the electronic world with like all the phishing attacks and the social engineering attacks and all the stuff that's going on in the world, you know, the last thing you want is someone getting into your digital identity, right? In this case, a Microsoft account. Although you could think of that, you know, your Gmail or Google account is the same thing. Your Apple ID is the same thing. If you have a work account, you know, your Active Directory domain account is the same thing. These are all digital identities. And so there's a bunch of stuff going on in Windows 10 where they're going to try to seamlessly integrate two-step or, you know, multi-step authentication into the operating system. And instead, you know, today you probably, I assume you use, you know, two-step at least in some places.
Everywhere you know. I can, yeah.
Yeah,
including
so
Outlook.com, my live login is has a second factor.
Yeah, so a lot of times the second factor is you could get a text message. You could have an authenticator app on your phone. Yep. So if I'm sitting here, one of the things that might happen during this podcast, for example, is I have a problem with Skype. Skype logs me out all the time. I have no idea why. Well, I have actually have some idea why, but it's annoying. You would think it wouldn't do it to the Skype client I'm actually actively using, but every once in a while it's just like,
I guess you don't need me. Yeah.
Well, I'm using my Microsoft account with Skype. And so the problem with this whole Skype thing is now I have to go in and type in my username, which is an email address. Right. I have to type in my complex password, and it is a complex password.
Yeah, so is mine.
And then I have to go find my phone to get a security code, which, you know, so it's three things I have to type in. And so what they're trying, just to kind of really simplify this, because on it, to be honest, I can't say that I completely understand it because I can't see it. I can only go on what they said. Is they're going to try to turn the device you're using into a second factor for multi-factor authentication. They're going to use, you know, obviously the TPM if it's a PC. They're going to do things like your phone. You've decided I want to use my phone as my second factor. It's not about typing in codes. It's just that the system will know that your phone is nearby because your PC in this case will have a relationship with the phone and will understand that it is literally physically here, thus you typing in your code while your phone is here means that you're here. Like that's the type of thing they're working on for Windows 10. So I need to see more. You know, I'm a little unsure of this. They're going to go biometric as well. We already have biometric stuff in the PC world. If you use an iPhone 5S or newer, you know that they have biometric now in Apple devices. It works great. And that the combination of a like a fingerprint and your account, and sometimes you have to put in a code because it's been a while, that kind of thing is actually not horrible security, and you don't have to remember a password. And so they're talking PINs, biometric, and then second factor with the device. And so we'll see how that works. But it's just talking about it, my head hurts. Like right now, my head is actually...
I can see it. Throbbing. It's kind of throbbing.
Yeah.
Your temples are
good. The other thing they talked about really vaguely, and I mean really vaguely, and I had talked to some people about Microsoft in the past, so I have a little bit of perspective on it, but they're working on this thing called that they call containers, and this is for information, you know, data, documents, that kind of thing. And obviously, if you think about a company, you might have private documents. You don't want them out in the world. So if you give a private document to an employee, you could have all these policies in place on their computer. But today, it would be pretty easy for a lot of people to take that private document, cut and paste it into a non-private application or other document and send it to other people, that kind of thing. And so Microsoft has had document protection technologies for a long time, Windows Rights Management and newer. They have BitLocker for encryption on devices that keeps people who physically have access to the hard drive or storage from getting at that information. But they're building this container technology, which is not unique to Microsoft. Other people are working on this as well. That will basically be a like a self-contained file, you know. So this container will include the document, but it will also contain an understanding of who can open it. And so you, as an employee with your credentials, you can get in. If you were fired and you're taken off of the Active Directory account, you can try to open that file later, and you can't get in. You know, they're intelligent documents essentially. And so this technology will be rolling out, you know, maybe alongside Windows 10, Windows Server 10, next versions of Windows Azure, Office 365, and so forth, and Microsoft account too. So I think we're going to hear more about the container stuff at TechEd in Barcelona. But very, very vague.
Is it Docker or is it? It's not Docker.
No, it's not Docker.
We talked about that last week.
It's their own thing. Yeah, no, it's their own thing. They haven't really talked about it a lot. I think I know Brad Anderson isn't going to tech it, but Brett, whoever is speaking for Brad Anderson's part of Microsoft, will be talking about it because this falls under the mobile device management stuff. It's essentially it's mobile application. I'm sorry, Actually, it's not mobile application. I'm sorry. Excuse me. It's more just document management. It's document. It's not mobile anything. It's just document management. But it's basically what, you know, Microsoft Azure Rights Management Services is. If you use the Office stuff, they have information rights management. It's basically that technology kind of applied across the Microsoft stack.
It's really something that can be addressed and handled, I think, better than passwords and second factor. And I think that companies like Microsoft and Google and Apple have to really put their minds behind, put their best people on this.
You know, if you were to make a science fiction movie over the past 10 or 20 years, one of the scenes that you would put in to kind of drive home the fact that this is the future is you would have an employee of the Space Marines or whatever it was, like walk up to an eye scanner and there'll be that lengthy scene where it like scans his eye and it says, yep, you're you, you know. And you know later that guy's going to get killed by somebody. They're gonna hold it back. So, but the truth is that kind of system is sort of what we're talking about here, right? In other words, you know, we're sitting here like, you can't use, you know, ABC123 is your password, Paul. You know, you got to, you know, it has to have a letter. One of them has to be capital. You can't have any, you know, special characters. We do all this stupid stuff. And, like, passwords are so terrible that we have different passwords. Or we have the same password, rather, on every service. Obviously, we have to get rid of that. And you know, if you have some biometric way of ensuring that you're you, your eye or your fingerprint or whatever, I mean, that stuff actually, it works. And so why not do that?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Really interesting stuff.
Sort of.
Well, of course. Yeah, no, the details are going to be technical and eye-drooping, but I think that it needs to be solved. And Bill Gates said that years ago. Passwords, he hates, Microsoft's been saying this for a long time, passwords are not the answer.
Right. And now more than ever. I mean, everything we do is online.
Right. And so I immediately use a 4-digit PIN to get into Windows because my live login is ridiculously long, as is yours.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But then I don't know. I don't know if that's a good solution either. That seems to reduce security.
I think a lot of this is, you know, risk versus convenience. I mean, with a phone, I have no problem logging with a PIN on a phone.
Right.
Although on an iPhone, I would use the finger thing because it's so awesome.
Well, and I have to say, that might be one of the solutions. That's a form of authentication, biometric authentication.
It literally is. Apple's already doing it on iOS. Yeah, I would say they're already.
Well, and Samsung does it on I've been using the Samsung Note 4. That works.
I was going to say, you'll know better than I could on the new device. But on my S5, I don't find that to be very reliable.
Somebody told me that there is a update. I don't know if you've got the update for the fingerprint reader. But so now to log in, it's not as good as Apple's.
Well, the problem with it is you have to swipe it. So you've got this very small surface, and you have to swipe it.
But it works.
With the Apple one, you just press your finger lightly on it, and you're in.
No, it doesn't work as well. Apple obviously bought Authentec, the company that has the patents for the way they do it. So Samsung can't. But it works. It's very much like Lenovo. If you've ever used a fingerprint swipe on a laptop, it's the same idea. You're kind of scanning your finger as you go over it.
Yeah.
You can use three different fingers as opposed to, I can't remember, Apple's is 5 or 10, a lot. So I have my left and right thumbs and my index finger. And
You do the ones you're going to naturally hit it with.
And some software uses it. LastPass, for instance, says,
Look at that.
Which is great because that gives me a stronger feeling of security than a password does. So I can swipe
And to be
that.
Fair, it's not even a stronger feeling of security. It's not like... you know, it's Homeland Security or anything. I mean, it's literally stronger security.
Right.
And it's better.
I think we could trust Samsung. The NSA just announced that they can trust Samsung. So I think that I think we can trust Samsung.
Hey, Samsung, there's a lot to make fun of there, but they
Knox
did create this
platform.
Knox technology. Yeah. And their Knox is so good, Google's integrating it into Android.
Right. Right.
They're doing something right.
Yeah, they're doing it. Yeah, exactly. So I'll have to look at the details of it, or maybe get Steve Gibson to look at the details of it. We know that Apple's doing a great job in securing the fingerprint and all of that.
Right. It's only a matter of time before that Touch ID thing is on MacBooks. In fact, I'm surprised they haven't done that yet.
Well, they just put it on iPads. So, yeah, I think it's slowly. And they own the company. They bought Authentic. So this is right. This is something that they can say, look, we got the best. I think, you know, that's fair to say.
Yeah, no, they're right there. Yeah. It's really smart. Their stuff works great.
But I'm just very pleased to have it. It just shows you that once you get used to the idea of fingerprint reading, you do want it. And I'm very pleased to have it on the Note 4.
You know, Windows 8, if you were to go back to Windows 7 and you had to type in your password, you'd be aggravated by that.
Right.
Once you've used Touch ID, having to type a four-digit PIN is aggravating.
It's aggravating
you
enough. Know,
like on an iPhone, if you reboot it, you have to type in your PIN the first time it comes back. And you're like, really?
Yeah. Isn't that funny? Like how spoiled.
Like how inconvenient. How dare you? Yeah, exactly. I know, like, right? But I mean, that's
so spoiled.
That's how wonderful it is.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with you. All right. Let us take a break. When we come back, Satya Nadella in the news again. More quotes from Satya. He's rapidly becoming the Eric Schmidt of Microsoft.
Wow.
Right?
It's hard to take that in a complimentary way.
Well, it's not. Schmidt was always great for a quote. For us, we loved it because we could always mock it. But But often Schmidt would put his foot in his mouth. In fact, he continues to do so, which is amazing. But I think Satya's savvier than that. But
I would say so.
He has put his foot near his orifice a couple of times lately. We'll talk about that in just a second. But first, a word from our friends at Squarespace, the place to go for... This is annoying, by the way. My Samsung phone says, you've been sitting for a long time. You should get up and move around.
Let's both do it. I'll walk around.
You walk around, I'll do an ad. How about that? I got work to do. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace, the place to make your next website, whether it's a blog, if you're a photographer or an artist, a portfolio, if you're in business, your business site, even e-commerce. Squarespace is constantly improving their platform. New features, new designs, even better support. I almost hate showing this to Paul because as anybody who has to use an antiquated content management system will immediately realize there are better ways. Squarespace is the hosting plus the software. If you click the Get Started button, you'll see you can do it for 2 weeks for free without a credit card, no personal information, just basically have the run of the place. Pick one of the 25 specially designed templates. I just picked Encore, which is a brand new template. This is part of their Squarespace 7 platform, which just came out. Encore gives your fans more. This is designed kind of for musicians. Designed to put your persona front and center without scrolling. Oh, I like it. This is one of the things they do really well, these full-bleed website designs. But it's more than that. It's more than that because Squarespace also, every site is mobile responsive. So it doesn't matter what size screen visits, it will look great. Everything from a 30-inch display or even a 55-inch display down to a 4-inch phone. Squarespace.com. All you have to do is click the Get Started button to create your new website. Play with it for 2 weeks absolutely free. It's very easy to use, but if you want some help, Squarespace has live chat and email support 24/7. So that you'll have that to fall back on. And it's, by the way, right from the home office. They do not outsource their support. They also have a completely redesigned customer help site for easier access to self-help articles, video workshops, e-commerce available on every site. Gotta love that. And that means even on the $8 a month plan, you could take donations if for a nonprofit or have a cash wedding registry, all cash wedding registry, or a fund drive for your school. $8 a month, that includes a free domain name when you sign up for a year. They have a great commerce solution too, and apps galore, like the Metric app for iPhone and iPad that lets you see your site stats, page views, unique visitors, even social media follows. The blog app, which like makes it easy to post. The portfolio app, which is great for photographers. Photographers can actually have a site on Squarespace, use a portfolio app on their iPad to share the site, the pictures on the site with their clients in a simpler way, you know, perfect for client presentations. It's little things like that that just make Squarespace great. For a two-week trial, visit squarespace.com. And if you want to buy, when you decide to, you know, pay for the site and say, I want this, use the offer code Windows. You get 10% off. Really great stuff. Squarespace.com. Offer code Windows to save 10% on your next website. Paul Thurrott is here. Mary Jo Foley has the week off. We're talking Windows. And Satya Nadella in the news. He didn't speak at that cloud conference on Monday, did he?
Actually, he spoke at length.
He did?
At that, yes, yes. He was arguably the biggest part of it.
Oh, that's interesting.
It is interesting because, of course, he came up through that part of the company. And
right.
His comfort level with this stuff is very high, you can tell. I mean, he was a major part of that, yeah.
And nobody asked him about raises or anything like that.
Actually, somebody did ask him about raises.
You're kidding.
No. Well, actually, I'm not sure it happened in the context of this thing. It's not on the video, and so it's possible this happened somewhere else. But I just read a thing where someone had, in fact, kind of jokingly asked him about raises.
Should I ask for a raise, Satya? I work at Microsoft. I bet his new advice is, oh, yes, but don't ask me. Ask your immediate supervisor.
He's never going to put this one behind him.
We found out he doesn't need a raise.
Yeah.
$84 million in salary bonus and stock grants.
Yep.
That's according to...
You know what the most interesting thing about this is to me is the money he was paid to stay at the company while they were looking for a CEO.
Oh, what's that?
$13.5 million.
Don't leave.
But
we may have
something
for you.
I want you to imagine this conversation. Somebody walks into your office and says, hey, Satya, we're looking for a new CEO. And I'm not saying you're the guy, but you're on the short list. We just want to make sure you don't go to Google or someplace while this is happening. And so if we give you $13.5 million
in stock,
will you just continue
cash.
Doing your job for the next 6 months?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, let me think about that. Yes. 6 months.
Yep.
Now, his salary, base salary, is a little less than $1 million. It's not so great. It's $919,000.
Well, that's this year. So actually, starting next year, it goes up to $1.2
million. Oh.
He gets an annual cash incentive based on performance of up to $3.6 million. And then an annual equity share of $13 million.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's not the $1 thing that Steve Jobs was doing.
Well, it was always a lie anyway. You know, as you can see, that $919,000 that he makes this year, that's sure. Pennies, chicken feed, like 1% of his total. And that's the token amount. It's always the stock you're interested in.
Yeah. And the biggest part of the outlay to Satya Nadella is $59 million. It's more than $59 million as part of a one-time stock grant. But he has to hold on to that until at least 2019. Five more years.
Do you think he asked for that raise?
No, I think he let karma take its course.
Did karma do it? Yeah.
Karma worked out.
Now we know why. He says, you know, you should all do what I did. Maybe you'll get $84 million.
I will never have $84 million, Leo.
I'll never see.
Yeah.
But that's okay. You know what? Let me tell you something. He's the CEO of Microsoft.
And actually, in my article, I tried to kind of drive that home. And I think we've talked about this a little bit. You know, Satya Nadella, just by uttering something in public in front of TV cameras or microphones, can change the stock price of Microsoft and thus the fortunes of millions of people, like just in 10 seconds, you know. There is an awesome responsibility there. Slightly more long-term, of course, he's running a company with over 100,000 employees, all of whom are looking to him for direction and leadership and, you know, to make the right decisions for the company and thus for their futures and their family's futures as well. I mean, there's an industry out there that is built around Microsoft as well. I mean, this guy is as powerful and has as much responsibility as many world leaders, more than many of them, right? So this is not a... You know, can you work the drive-in this weekend, Mr. Nadella? It's a little more serious than that, you know. I don't, you know, it's just something to put in perspective. The other thing, and I got this from Business Insider, I think. You know, if you think that's a lot of money, Tim Cook, first year at Apple,
right.
Over $300 million.
Right.
Jeez.
You can't blame Microsoft's board when CEO salaries are so crazy and out of control.
Yeah.
They're just keeping parity. You can, right, though, I think, and probably we should as a nation, start really, and as shareholders, start really questioning these enormous CEO salaries.
So
this is something relatively new.
Right. And by the way, I would put the amount of money that sports players make into the same category.
Actually,
where I feel like it's outsized based on what is happening here. The other thing, by the way, is I didn't actually write about this, but if you look at the SEC filing, Satya Nadella was given that 13.2 million, I think it was, or 13.5 million just to stick around just in case he became CEO. They gave that kind of money to other people, too, for the same reason. They also gave that kind of money, and it's not always exactly 13. Sometimes it was 8, sometimes it was 9, you know, it depended on the person, whatever. They actually paid a lot of people to stick around during the CEO transition, specifically because them not doing so would have suggested to the outside world, mm-hmm, to investors, mm-hmm, that something was wrong at Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're like an Amy Hood, the CFO of Microsoft, or any of the other people on the executive team, you were handed in the single digits or tens of millions of dollars just to stick it out for the year.
Yeah.
Just to put on appearances. And
that's pretty amazing.
And they justified it by saying, you know, there's obviously intense competition out there for these people, and this is the market value for these employees.
What do you think that conversation is, though? Like, well, how much do we give? How much do we have to give Satya? $13.5 million. How much do we have to give Stephen Elop? Does it? And then, oh, Stephen's cheap. We'll give him 8.
That's right. Right.
I mean,
imagine that little executive board meeting.
What is that?
Wait a minute.
Where do they get these numbers?
You got $13 million? They only give me 7. What the hell?
Yeah, what is the number and where do they get it? Like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm thinking Tony Bates, we don't really care if he leaves, do we? Oh, a little bit.
Right.
Give him a couple million. See what happens.
Tony, could you go grab some coffee while the big boys talk?
It's just, and it's not something that is part of the normal life of any other humans in the world.
It's nuts.
We only pay the president of the United States, arguably the most powerful person in the world,
I know.
$500,000 a year.
Right.
Now, admittedly, there's a good upside when you're president. Years.
There's some pretty bad downsides.
But there's some downsides, too.
Yeah. No, the whole thing is insane to me.
Don't you think you could get someone to run Microsoft for, let's say, $1 million?
Yeah.
Could you get the best person is, I guess, the question.
Right. That's a good question. I don't know.
I think you could have gotten Satya for $1 million. I mean, really? The guy's a lifer, a Microsoft lifer, for all intents and purposes. He's not. So he gave an interview on CNBC on Monday.
Okay.
I don't know if you saw this. He addressed the karma question. Should women ask for a raise? He said, no, they should trust to karma. He said, I was completely wrong in the answer I gave. Because I basically took my own approach to how I've approached my career, and I sprung it on half the humanity, and that was insensitive. I gave a generic answer based on, quite frankly, what I've believed and how I've practiced and lived my life. In other words, he's saying, well, I never asked for a raise. I trusted to karma, and I thought, well, if you're faced with bias in your career, what should you do?
Sure.
He said, though, and I think he's sensitized, because he said, how would they feel by sort of getting the advice that says, be passive? In the face of bias, the last thing I want anyone to be is passive. So he says, I was naive, thinking of my own personal experience versus understanding I'm speaking to women who really, really want to make sure that people like me are making it easy for them to be able to participate in the workforce fully. So I think that's a good answer. He does say something that... you know, he's talking about the cloud, because I guess he was there for the cloud event, and then that's why I did CNBC. But he did say something towards the end that was, I guess, I don't know if you saw this at the end there. He says, we want you to use us when you just want to save any file or any document, any artifact of yours. I guess he's talking about the cloud. And then have a natural way for us to monetize as you use more of it in the commercial context. CNBC's John Fort said, kind of the freemium model which a lot of startups in Silicon Valley have latched onto. But Microsoft has always been fond of getting paid for the software it spent so much time and money developing, he points out. Nadella responds, oh, well, we've always had freemium. Sometimes our freemium was called piracy.
Yeah. So, by the way, the use of the word commercial is interesting. This is something Mary Jo and I have talked about on this podcast. This is a recent addition to the Microsoft lexicon. You know, when someone from Microsoft uses the word commercial, what they're really saying is business. What they mean is business software. And if I'm parsing that sentence correctly, it almost sounded to me like what he was saying was, we're okay with individuals, consumers, using our free services. What we're hoping for is that when they use them in businesses, that those will be paid. You know, it seemed like that is almost what he just said there. So in other words, you as an individual, please, yes, use Outlook.com. It's free. Use OneDrive. It's free. You know, use Internet Explorer and Bing and MSN and Office.com and all that stuff. It's all free. But when you're at work, use Office 365. That costs something. Use Windows. You know, pay for Windows at work. Right. You know, that costs something. It sounds like that's what he's saying.
Yeah, I think it is what he's saying. Use it at home, and then when you get to work, you'll pay for it.
Because this, I think, you know, again, I don't mean to read too much into it, but I mean, a lot of the Microsoft mobile first, cloud first thing is semi-controversial in certain circles. And I guess the thought here is that people want to use what they're comfortable with. And so if people get used to using Microsoft stuff on their, even if it's on an iPad or an Android phone or something, when they get to work, they're going to say, hey, I use this thing. I'm used to it. Do we have this thing? And maybe it will be on a Windows PC or a Windows tablet or something. But they'll stick with Microsoft solution. And in that case, we'll be paying for it. Or, you know, their workplace will be paying for it. I wonder if that isn't what he was getting at there.
What's interesting to me is that a lot of pirates, let's face it, have said, well, companies like Adobe and Microsoft shouldn't worry so much about piracy because that model lets, you know, the alternative would be perhaps for us to use a competitor's product. This way we get to use Photoshop or Word.
Actually, the best argument is I'm not buying this anyway.
Right.
So if you actually make it impossible for me to pirate this, I'm just going to use something else.
Right.
You know?
Right. And people have often said, hey, the success of, let's say, Photoshop, for example, is in a good part due to the fact that so many people got it for free and then liked it and then wanted to use it professionally and wanted manuals, wanted support, and wanted updates. So they bought it, or they got their company to buy it. So I think it's, in a way, it's Nadella acknowledging that freemium, a.k.a. piracy, has always been a part of Microsoft's success. And that's kind of what pirates have said for a long time. It's a little self-justifying when pirates say it, but
I don't remember. I have a friend from Microsoft, and I'm embarrassed to see he might be listening now, and he'll correct me. But I don't remember which one it was, and I don't remember if this is public knowledge or not. Now, but I'll just say it, you know, kind of vaguely. But he basically had gone to China for work-related reasons and came home with a duffel bag full of pirated Microsoft software just to kind of show people, like, this is what's happening on the streets of wherever it was. This was, you know, some time ago now.
Oh, but everybody, you know, Dvorak told me when I went to China a couple of years ago, he said, he gave me the name of a department store, very well-known department store in downtown Beijing, and said, go into the basement, you get any movie ever on a DVD, beautifully produced as if it's a commercial venture. It's a pirated version, similar with software. That's the next floor up. And it's always been the case in China.
Floor two, pirated software. Lingerie.
Yeah, and it looks, and it, I mean, it doesn't look cheesy.
That's amazing.
You know, it looks real. Probably because they make all that stuff anyway, right? But at night, when the presses are silent, let's print a few more.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the press keeps going.
Yeah. They've always said that with flash memory, that they would keep the factories running at night and sell it under the table.
Wow.
Yeah. We don't know. You see that Tim Cook actually flew to China today to talk to the vice premier? Well, both Microsoft and Apple were getting bit by the great firewall of China. The Chinese government says it's not us, but it is, after all, the great firewall.
Oh, the Chinese government that is right now engaged in hacking iCloud, those guys?
Yeah, that's it. We didn't do that.
No, I mean, you understand that's seriously happening right now.
Right now. So that's exactly why Cook's there. And they did the same thing to live.com. If you go to live.com or Apple's iCloud.com in China, at least through Monday, and this was kind of coincided with the release of the iPhone, so they figure, well, a lot of people are going to get iPhones and sign up for iCloud. You'd go to a page that looked just like an iCloud page or a live.com page. You'd enter your credentials just as you would normally. They would then forward you on to iCloud or live.com.
But then behind the scenes, they were
they saved the password.
That's actually
clever.
Yeah, I hate to say it like that, but
clever.
Yeah, that is actually pretty clever. Yeah. I have to say.
So, so Tim Cook goes to China today. Apple really, so this is, I mean, it's just hysterical because Apple, just like Microsoft, just like everybody else, they really don't want to piss off the Chinese. It's a big market.
Oh, yeah.
So Apple releases a page that doesn't mention China in any way, but just shows how you can check the certificates when you log in and make sure you're really using a real login page. And, you know, we've heard that people might be hijacking iCloud. No word of China. Here's how you avoid that. And then, so,
by the way, Microsoft is working at fixing this kind of problem too.
Yeah, they redirect now, and that's what Apple's doing. Yeah. And I think Microsoft would do the same thing. But Tim Cook flies to China today, meets with the vice premier.
I mean, the Chinese government is engaging in something that, like, I get these emails every day. Hey, Paul, your PayPal thing is not up to date. Could you please enter your credentials?
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, guys, seriously. I mean, but people must fall for this so regularly,
mm-hmm. and not know it.
Look, I think what he should do is say, look, I know what you want is the Jennifer Lawrence photos. And if
got
we give you
here.
Those, we
yeah.
just kind of stop the whole thing? Is that what it's going to take?
Maybe
I don't understand.
You think?
What is this conversation like?
Oh, I have the
quote. Can you please stop hacking us? I mean, no, seriously.
The story comes from the official Chinese news agency, Xinhua. And here's the quote from Xinhua.
Okay.
The official Chinese news agency. And here's a picture, by the way, that's tweeted. This looks just like Nixon in China.
They're sitting
in the armchairs.
Right. That's the same place.
It's the same place. They have tea and they pose for photos. That's from the Chinese TV news service.
Oh, that's incredible.
And the tweet from the Chinese TV news service is, Vice Premier Ma Kai meets with Apple CEO Tim Cook on user data protection.
Right. Please, could you please protect our users' data since you clearly have half of it now?
I would love to have been a fly on the wall because Cook's got to come in guns a-blazing.
They've proven that this is coming from Chinese governmental servers.
Greatfire.org, which showed the trace routes, seemed pretty conclusive.
That's
China
what I'm saying,
heatedly denied it.
Sure.
Here's the news release from Xinhua.
Well, of course they did. I mean,
they exchanged views, quote, on protection of users' information during their meeting. They also exchanged views on strengthening cooperation in information and communication fields.
Okay.
Damn you, Makai! I could just see Tim Cook going in there, guns a-blazing.
China's been a problem for a long, long time. I think we
this
can agree
This is
that,
beyond but. The pale, though, to hijack.
You know what? It's
look at Chin. Tim's cheeks do look a little red.
Yeah. Well, he's always got that
maybe
kind of.
Been yelling.
Like looks like someone that lives in, like, Newfoundland or something. He's got this kind
of
weird.
He's a
newfie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's really strange.
Do you think he went with a bag of cash?
Right. You have to give the type of gift that your host expects. Don't worry, they're euros. They're actually worth something. All of our money's overseas. What do you want?
Yeah, really?
You know, what currency would you prefer?
Tax breaks, anyone? All right. Microsoft Office, which is now really as much iPad Office.
Yeah.
And Android Office as Windows
so,
Office.
I'm not going to be able to spend enough time on this because this is actually a really big topic. But basically, there's a Microsoft distinguished engineer who appeared at a Facebook conference, or I think it was, and he talked about how Microsoft develops cross-platform Office solutions. He talked about Office for iPad, Office for Android, Office for Windows RT, Office for phones. It was fascinating. And he did a nice little history bit where he went back into something you'll remember when Microsoft was coming up with Word 6.0 for Mac and Windows, and I think Excel 5.0 at the time for Mac and Windows. They tried to make a common engine for both applications, and all they ended up doing was creating like terrible versions. Well, actually, Word 6 was pretty good, but you know the Macintosh version of Word they put out at the time was terrible. Everyone hated it, and it wasn't until 1998 when they did Office 98 for the Mac where they finally set things right with the Mac community. But, you know, they are literally learning from that event. This is like 20 years ago now almost. And saying, look, we can't come up with some kind of huge abstraction layer and just put the same apps out everywhere. We have to make sure that the apps all have the right features for the platform, that they use platform-specific user experiences that the people who use those things will expect. But we also have to ensure like fidelity for the documents and the data that goes through these apps so that when you bring it up on a phone, when you bring it up on a tablet, when you bring it up on your computer, on the web, whatever, edit it, you don't destroy any of the underlying metadata and make it look wrong. And this was just a fascinating open kind of thing. And this guy also had this really neat way of being very complimentary to the audience, which was developers, cross-platform developers, and to other platforms. And it was just, it was so, if there are still people out there who have this lingering Microsoft hatred thing, please watch this video. You will be blown away. There's a lot of developer stuff that you may not understand, but it is the most wonderful open Microsoft thing I've ever seen. And it is also fascinating if you're curious about how you know, they intend to support all these different platforms, because now, of course, Microsoft is committed to doing that. So it's really, really neat. And I think I would have spent a lot more time on it if we hadn't had this Windows technical preview stuff.
I think it really is the new Microsoft. This is very clearly, and maybe Steve Ballmer started it, but it's Nadella's initiative.
The other thing, a lot of people are like, oh, Microsoft's dead. No one wants to buy Office, you know. Watch the video. You'll come away with the feeling that these guys are competent and get it and understand the world in which they operate in and are doing an amazing job. It's just a neat thing.
I almost feel like somebody just needed to give them permission.
Yeah. You got to think, you know, in a company like a technical company where a lot of developers, a lot of engineers, a lot of those guys came up through whatever educational system in this world. This is what they want.
They want to do this. But they have to be given permission if it's not the company's
initiative. I think the shackles are off.
I agree. Just it's great.
Open season. Yeah. Very, very different.
This is very googly. What is this thing? Click to launch. It looks just like the Google Apps launcher. It's that grid of...
I know. Someone else told me that. Yeah. I guess it does. Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's okay. I think they should use the hamburger menu thing, personally. But,
no, don't you know the hamburger's dead?
Is it?
Oh, yeah. You're just way out of...
I like the hamburger.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Well, I like the hamburger too. In fact, and the reason I know this is we suggested to our web designers hamburgers, and they said, oh, no.
Over.
That is so 2013. The hamburger is over. And they said the reason is nobody looks under the hamburger. Nobody ever clicks it. It just looks like lines to them. So this is the new hamburger, which is a grid of squares. And it is exactly, if you go to Google, if you have a Google account or Gmail, it's exactly, look at this. This is it on Google right here. It's a grid of squares. It's 3x3. You click it, and all your apps come out.
Yeah, but there's a huge difference, Leo, because when you click the one on Microsoft site, it opens Microsoft icons.
Yeah, there's a difference. And this is for Office. This is Office Live. Is that what it is?
So this is all the consumer services, the consumer productivity services. So office.com. OneDrive.com and Outlook.com.
Yeah.
And so before, the way this used to work was there wasn't a box there. And if you click the thing that says Word Online in that photo,
it would have a drop down, right?
You would get a drop down. Yeah. It would be one line. It wasn't two lines.
Right.
I think the problem with that was no one saw that. And I think that this thing makes it a little more obvious that there's more going on and we'll get more click
through. I think this is the new hamburger. I think that Apple uses it too.
Right.
I think this is the new thing. And
I like it. The anal attentive part of me, if you go back to that screenshot, you'll notice that I would prefer for the Word Online to be down with the other Office Online apps.
It's up with OneDrive, Calendar,
PDF. Yeah, I don't know.
I agree with you.
But whatever. It's okay. Yeah. Jerks. No, I think it looks nice.
So basically, they replaced the down arrow with squares, and it still kind of drops down.
It still required a 1,000-word blog post. But yes, that's basically...
It did, with screenshots.
Yep.
I think this is funny because I really think it points to the difficulty of doing UI design online. And when our designers say, no hamburgers... They're sincere.
The device type. So when you're on a PC, you may be more or less apt to click on certain things.
Right.
But when you're on an iPad and you're touching the screen, likewise, you may be more or less inclined to tap different things. And so maybe this, I'm sure there was a lot of telemetry that went into this, but I'm sure this solves the, or hopefully solves the problem. So
Let's take a break. Windows Phone News coming up in just a second. Paul Thurrott is here. Mary Jo Foley has the week off. Boy, is she missing a great show. She's in.
Well, the spirit of Mary Jo will be with us. I'll do a bear pick. And
she's going to Barcelona for some event. Is there an event? Is this tech?
Yeah,
is
tech in Europe.
Yeah,
is Barcelona.
All right. Yep. Man, she's got an exciting life. Our show today brought to you by a good company that does so many products and business that we use, Citrix, and their company or their product is Citrix ShareFile. And this is something, this may be the single Citrix product I use more than any other. ShareFile lets me share files with others. Now, you might say, well, what about email attachments? Well, we don't do email attachments. We tell you not to do email attachments. It's a bad idea. They're not secure. People could see what's going back and forth between you and your recipient. Of course, it's a great way to spread viruses. So we tell people don't open attachments. What's going to happen to your attachment in that case? And yet in business, well, you know, you got contracts, presentations, spreadsheets. You got to share stuff. So how do you do it? ShareFile. Citrix ShareFile. I love it. You don't lose control of the file as you do. You know, when you press that send button on the email, that's it. There's no turning back. With ShareFile, you can always turn back. ShareFile sends secure links with your branding, so it doesn't even, you know, it's clear it came from you and your company. You can send files of almost any size. There's no more bounce backs. Easily, securely, you control who opens the file, how long they can access it, how many times they can download it. And it's easy for them, too. They get a big button that says download. They don't have to sign up, log in, or anything like that. It makes it so straightforward. Plus, you could password protect files for optimal security. HIPAA compliant, compliant with regulations in many industries, including financial services. Here's what you do. Visit Citrix ShareFile. The website is sharefile.com. Up at the top, there's a link that says podcast listeners. Click here. Click that link right at the top there with a microphone. And use the offer code Windows. You'll get 30 days free. Do select your industry because they'll customize it to fit the needs and the usage of your industry. Pretty much every industry, by the way. And one of the nice things about ShareFile is you can request files, too. So it's a secure way to exchange files, either sending or receiving. It really is easy for your clients to use as for requesting files, too. I love ShareFile. Use it every week, sending audio files to the radio stations. You can try it for the next 4 weeks. Visit ShareFile.com, click the microphone at the top of the page where it says podcast listeners, and enter the offer code Windows for 30 days free. Citrix ShareFile. Paul Thurrott, Leo Laporte, talking Windows, Microsoft, Windows Phone, Microsoft. This was, you know, if you listen to this show, you're so far ahead of the rest of the world. So we've been saying for probably months that Microsoft was going to drop the Nokia name and just be Microsoft on the phones. And it's a big news story this week. I didn't even do it. I've been filling in for Mike Elgin on Tech News Today. I figured everybody who watches Twit knows this. But not everybody in the rest of the world.
You got to kind of cover it. But just to be clear, yes, they're going to continue to call their smartphones Lumia. And yes, they're going to drop the Nokia name. It will be Microsoft Lumia. So there you go.
But we knew that was going to happen. Although they have the right to use the name. It was part of the agreement.
For years and years. I mean, for some crazy amount of time. But of course, they need to go with their own brand. Right. I mean, they can't keep using the Nokia name. So
we've
already seen it. You know, all the apps are turning into Lumia apps. Yeah. It's happening. So
we just reviewed the $79. Was it the 530? I can't remember. It's really kind of it's cheap and it's you know, colorful backs, great for kids.
A hockey pack.
Yeah, but it still says Nokia on it. The one we had from
Cricut. So the current generation, the 830, the 730, 735, and the 530 are going to be it. I think for the Nokia branded phones.
Yeah,
this is the end.
This is the end. What is replacing the Lumia 1520?
Oh, God, Leo. I don't know. There have been so many rumors about, well, first of all, you know, a 1030, right? A 40-something megapixel replacement for the 1020, which I would love to own. A 1525, 1530 type device.
Yeah.
Sure. The thing about the 1520, though, is honestly, today, that thing is still very modern from a hardware spec perspective.
Absolutely. Everybody else is now just releasing their phones.
Yeah. So I don't think there's any reason to replace that one yet. I actually have a bigger issue with the 1020 because the 1020 is underpowered, especially for the size of the camera that, sensor it has.
It's almost and 2 years old, too, isn't it? I mean, it's pretty old.
It's about a year and a half. Not quite a year and a half, but okay. It's, mid-2013.
But that was the first PureView, the 41-megapixel
phone. Yeah, the only one they've ever made with that kind of camera. And it's just getting long in the tooth. Really slow performance.
Can it go to cyan or black? I mean, what is it? Is it up to date?
Yeah, actually, the one it is on cyan, right now.
Cyan. An 8-1.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Will they replace? Okay, so right now the Nokia branding is on the phone. It says Nokia.
Right.
So you've got the company Nokia, you've got the kind of phone, the Lumia, and then you have the number.
Right.
They're going to put Microsoft where it says Nokia, or they're just going to call
Lumias? They haven't discussed that yet. And so I think that announcement's actually going to be very soon. But I suspect what they're going to do is literally have the word Microsoft be there. Hopefully not Microsoft Mobile,
There's not that much room on the back of these.
Somebody made this comment to me. I don't know if it was in comments or on Twitter, but it was actually a pretty decent comment about the state of Windows Phone, which was just that, when you walk around in the world with a Lumia and somebody sees it and says, oh, what is that? I've often had people say, oh, is that the new iPhone? And then he hit him in the head a couple of times. And you say, no, that hurt, right? Because that's a Lumia. I don't think people understand Nokia here in the United States. They don't understand the term Lumia. But I think if you said, oh, no, this is a Windows phone,
they'd get
okay.
That. Yeah.
Like, I don't necessarily know what one looks like, but that makes sense to them, I think,
Now I know why it looks so weird.
Yeah. I almost wish they would put Windows Phone on it, I don't know. Microsoft's trying to push the brand. The Surface is Surface. Lumia is Lumia. Maybe it just says Lumia.
And reluctant WP guy again in the chat room. Makes a good point.
Just get him on the show. He could replace Mary Jo.
Well, in the U.S., the Nokia brand maybe didn't carry a lot of weight, but it sure does in Europe, the Middle East, Asia. That is a huge brand. Is this a mistake for Microsoft to drop that?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I understand that question. They're going to continue using the Nokia brand on the, the candy bar phones, the kind of the dumb phones.
I think
with the Lumia brand lineup, I think they need to go
it's a Microsoft thing. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, they, for better or worse, it's theirs now. They're going to have to make their own run with it.
So Surface Pro 2, no longer in the market.
Yeah, Brad Sam's noticed this one. If you go to the Surface website and you click on Surface Pro 2, it's still there. But when you try to buy it, it comes up with this awful page. It's like the product you were looking for no longer exists.
Oy.
And so he confirmed with Microsoft that, stocks ran out. I mean, I don't know why people are surprised by this. I think the real story here is that you remember Microsoft's strategy for Surface did not work out the way they originally intended. They were going to release a Surface Mini to replace Surface 2.
Right.
And they were going to release a Surface Pro 3 to replace Surface Pro 2. Surface Mini got canceled or at least, temporarily halted. And so now they've got this kind of long in the tooth Surface 2, which you can still buy. But Surface Pro 2, I mean, obviously they were just going to sell that until there weren't any left. And so that's what's happened. The one you're looking at now, by the way, is not the right machine. That's Surface 2. Like, that one you can still buy.
Okay, I'm confused.
This is the RT device.
That's RT.
Like, if you go to...
So products don't even have the...
maybe they've actually removed it now.
They've actually now removed them. Yeah.
I haven't looked
recently. Surface 2, Surface Pro 3. That's it. They've removed
Surface Just go to surface.com, like the top of the site. And they used to be... it's different.
No, I think they took it off.
Oh, no, there's a products. Oh, you don't see it on yours.
No.
Yeah, just go to surface.com.
Products.
And now click on products. And now you'll see Surface Pro 2 in there.
Oh, there it is. Whoops.
Yeah. Products. So if you click on buy now, let's see what it does now. Yeah. It just goes to this product is currently unavailable. I can't.
Wow.
Kind of a tough way to do that.
That's not. They should just. You know what? How hard is it to remove that from the menu?
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, anyway, this is very natural. I mean,
of course.
Over the course of the summer, they reduced the price on it, just like they did with previous gen
services. It's $799. Who's going to pay $799 for it? Nobody. That makes no sense.
You're going to be able to buy these on eBay soon for like $300 or something.
There is competition, though, at the low end. A $200, sub-$200 Next Book, it's called.
Well, like you, Leo, I'm a big fan of the eFund Corporation.
I love eFund!
I wrote something. I if you look at the first thread of my article about this, I wrote that eFund, which amusingly bills itself as the fifth largest tablet supplier in the U.S., they actually called me on that. They say that they are, in fact, the fifth largest.
Well, I believe it. It just drops off really fast.
It must be an ODM or that kind of thing. I don't know. But so you know that in the PC space, we have zero-cost and low-cost Windows licenses now, phone and PC and tablet. And so we have $99 and actually, by the way, sub-$99 tablets, which are terrible, like mini tablets. We have, I would say, $250, not counting sale prices, the typical low-end Windows laptop today, although this holiday season, you know, there's an HP Stream coming for $199. And now we've got this little guy, and this is the first sub-$200.
That's amazing.
Two-in-one. Although, actually, WinBook sells something very similar to this, too. $179. You know, low-end specs. I mean, 10-inch screen, 1280 by 800, IPS, quad-core Intel Atom processor. It's only got a gig of RAM. That's the one, maybe, big weak link in the whole thing. 32 gigs of storage, which is actually pretty good for this price.
But then an Alienware deal pops up on their YouTube video. You might want to turn off monetization,
the other end of
guys.
The spectrum.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, you know, and this really blows me away. These really low-cost machines, which are arguably not necessarily great for productivity per se, they always come with a one-year free subscription to Office 365 Personal, which includes a terabyte of OneDrive storage, right?
Wow.
That's worth, I think it's $69. You know?
Wow.
I mean, that's crazy.
Is Microsoft, they must be giving them.
Oh, yeah. They're giving it away.
Yeah. Wow.
Yep.
So this, you know, at this point, you just, you know, you're getting the computer for $100.
Yeah. So back in the day, 10 years ago, when my kids were really young, I don't know if it was 10 years ago, 8 years ago, whatever it was, I bought them both these Toshiba netbooks, you know, small. And they used these things for years. They used them for everything. They put movies on them. We watched movies on planes and stuff. I would buy this.
Absolutely.
For them now.
Absolutely. It's better.
Yeah.
Right. And who cares? They could lose it. Who cares?
Yep.
Well, not right away, kids. Can you wait a few months anyway? Is that a common term for this kind of detachable keyboard, a pogo keyboard?
I looked that one up too. So the term, I think it's a type of keyboard.
Well, it comes from pogo pins, right? Which are how those
pogo pin keyboard
connections are. But I know that, and you know that because that's our business. But I wonder if real people know what a pogo keyboard is.
Well, right, and that's why I looked at it because I was like, is this, I mean, am I misunderstanding what this is? They're talking about the type of, you know, I guess they're trying to differentiate it from like a chiclet kind of keyboard. You know, that it's
I don't know what they're trying to. It clicks.
It moves, Leo. There's one might call it a throw.
Yeah.
To the key stroke.
But do you think that, I mean, it sounds more like they're talking about how it attaches. I don't know if this is common parlance.
I thought pogo pin was on the actual keys.
No, the pogo pins are those little connectors, those four or five copper dots.
Oh, they're connected to the...
They're connected to the bottom.
Oh, I misunderstood that completely.
Well, there you go. That proves this is not common parlance.
I had to look it up. I didn't understand what
it's a pogo keyboard. I think that means it's detachable.
Okay. So I've used a lot of these types of devices where you pull the screen off.
Right.
And I have to say, that latch can absolutely be the weak link.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in the first gen Windows 8 HP devices, they had like kind of a consumer version and a higher end business version. We're both actually pretty lousy. Maintaining the connection is the type of thing. You'd be typing and all of a sudden you weren't typing because, you know, the connection died. You didn't know why. That kind of thing can be the weak link.
Somebody in the chat room is pointing out that an MSDN Pro subscription renewal now is $800. And it does not include the free Office 365. So Microsoft, you're throwing it in for a $200 pogo pin.
Yeah.
Could you just throw it in for the MSDN subscription, please?
Well, I this kind of goes back to the historical way that everybody acquired Windows and Office. You got it with a PC.
Right. You know? You didn't need to have it with your MSDN.
But, you know, the neat thing about Office 365 from Microsoft's perspective is that if you buy a machine and keep it for more than a year and you get used to Office 365, you're going to throw them $69 next year.
Right. Yeah, give it away for the first year. That's freemium.
You know, before you would give it away and people would just use whatever the free version was on the machine because it would last forever.
Right. All right, let's talk about the thing we really want to talk about.
I know, finally.
I'm really tempted to order this Master Chief Collection of Halo. It's every map
ever. I don't know if you're paying attention to the story. Did you look at the specs on this thing?
No.
This is a 45 gigabyte download.
Oh, I did see that, yeah.
Yeah, but here's the kicker. On day one, which is what? November 11 in the United States, you will need to download another 20 gigabytes of additional content.
Whoa.
Now, the way they described it was that you will be able to start playing the campaign immediately. You don't have to worry, you know, whatever. But I think some of the online stuff is actually going to require this day one update. So that's, I mean, and then 65 gigabytes of stuff.
See, now you know why I put a 2 terabyte drive in my USB port. I don't worry about that.
I really wish they had the forethought to make the hard drive something you could just unplug and replace, you know, with a bigger unit.
You can't. That's right.
So I don't understand. This thing is the size of my Volkswagen. Why isn't there a drawer that pops out?
Yeah.
I should be able to say Xbox, hard drive out. No?
So, but think about it. You're getting every version of Halo, right?
Well, all of the versions that had Master Chief, so 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Okay.
All of the multiplayer maps across those releases, including the PC versions.
That's
right?
Got to so be get a all lot of maps. It's hundreds of maps, right?
And then there's something called Spartan Ops, which is...
that's a top-down, like co-op, isn't that? Oh, it's co-op.
No, okay. This was part of Halo 4. I never actually played. I don't recognize the name either. I don't even know what this is exactly, but it's a like a co-op thing. It's 10 episodes, I think. That's not even coming. That'll be another download in December. Wow. So this is like some massive historical document.
It's a historical document. It's exactly what it is. I mean, this is... I'll be playing versions of Halo I played on Tech TV, right? I mean...
Yeah. But I need your...
I'm going to buy it. 60 bucks.
There's no way I'm not going to get this. I mean...
You know, it's like a buck a gigabyte. It's a good deal.
Right. Yeah, but now I have to actually... I'm out of space. So now that I've done this, I am literally out of space. So now I have to make a decision. Do I actually want to attach a hard drive to this stupid thing?
Because you got Modern Warfare coming, too.
Right. So that's the other one. So Modern Warfare, I don't actually... I could look it up, I guess. I'm not even sure.
Just the Kevin Spacey files alone are going to be gigabytes.
Yep. Yeah, just these Kevin's... Yeah, 25 gigs of Kevin Spacey skins. this one's funny because there's so many different versions of this game, and it's not as bad on digital. But if you were to go into a store and actually look at the versions, it's like this crazy number of editions you can buy, and they all come with special weapon packages and, you know, brass
exoskeleton. Advanced Warfare bundle.
Yeah, it's
the really Warfare awesome. Day Zero edition.
But the one you want, well, Atlas, unless you don't have
which
an Xbox
One. Which
one
do I want? Yeah. There's Atlas Pro. Well, there's Atlas Limited. You could spend $130 on this game.
They go all the way down to the bottom. And well, so digitally, there's two versions. So there's a $100 version, which is the one I get. Because the truth is, for me, like, I do go through the single-player campaign. I like that. But I then spend the next year playing this game online.
This
and
is
the
your
way they've been doing
game.
Yeah. So in the past, you would buy, in the past, like in the past 2-3 years, you would buy this season pass. And it was basically $60. So it was kind of like you're buying the game again. But it got you whatever I think it was usually 4 drops of DLC content, multiplayer maps. There was like an extinction thing they did this time around. They did zombies in some of the games. And this is basically a way to pay for all that stuff up front in one package. And so it's the game. It's all the stuff you get in, like all the digital stuff you get in the higher end physical packages. And then the DLC content over the next year. So basically what I've just done is committed myself for the rest of 2015 to what I'm going to be doing with Xbox One.
So forget Halo. You're never going to play Halo. I love that this has got Kevin Spacey in it, which is just bizarre.
I know.
And it looks...
It's like a futuristic Top Gun.
Everybody ready?
Is it a movie? Is it a game?
Yeah, yeah. I think this is like the, you know, like one of the canned, you know, in between.
This is a cutscene, I know, but I mean, still. Yeah. Let's see if I get though. There's a Golden Gate Bridge. But,
you know, there are elements of
politicians don't know how to solve
other games in this, you know, like Titanfall.
Ooh, I love it. That's the Call of Call. I mean, the game of whatever House of Cards. House of Cards version of Kevin Spacey. That's the
right.
Oh, I can't wait. This is clearly going after people who are House of Cards fans.
I know.
A whole new demographic.
I don't know what
Call
the crossover is there. It's like me and you, man.
Yeah, me and you.
Yeah.
So it's still going to be a shoot 'em up, but Kevin Spacey will show up once in a while? I don't understand.
Well, I mean, he'll be part of the single-player campaign. He's probably basically the bad guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or the, the guy.
He's a good guy or a bad guy? We don't know.
I think he's probably a bad guy.
It'd be fun to play Kevin like you play the dog, says Gomery.
Yeah. Yeah, Kevin, get over here.
I'm going to play Kevin.
Right.
Go get him, Kevin. Neat.
Yeah.
Really neat. That's exciting. So we're not going to see gamers for another 6 months now. You're going to go back down in your hole.
Well, what do we got? We got about 2.5 weeks. 3 weeks, almost.
Yeah. So. Cards of Duty, somebody said. House of Cards of Duty.
When does Call of Duty come out, though? Oh, the other thing is, Call of Duty, if you pre-order it digitally, you can play it the day before it comes out physically.
Right.
So you get 24 hours, like double experience points.
They want to push people towards digital, don't they? If I were GameStop, I'd be pissed.
Yes. Obviously, the one problem with digital is if you don't like the game, you're kind of screwed. It's hard or impossible to sell.
But that's why they want
to
do it.
My God, like not having to put a disc in this thing?
I don't buy get discs anymore. I realized, in fact, it was such a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
What was the last game? I bought a game. I can't remember what it was. Probably, I don't know. It was a disc. It was like not the first round of games, second round of games. And I realized I could download it. And even though I already had the disc coming, I bought the download.
You bought it, and just sent it back.
And that was the last disc I will ever buy.
Only disc that's ever been in my Xbox One was a Blu-ray movie, and I just put it in there to test Blu-ray movie playback.
I have Blu-ray movies, but I don't think I've ever put one in there.
No, I never actually watched Blu-rays. So it's important to me that I buy every version of the Star Wars movies that's ever been made. So I do have the Blu-ray version.
Yeah, but do you watch them?
No. No, I do not.
You just look at them on the shelf. Somebody's pointing out, actually a very good point, that Frank Underwood in House of Cards unwinds, and there's several times this happens during the show.
He plays Call of Duty.
He plays Call of Duty.
That's right. That's true.
So that explains
Maybe that's why they reached out to him. For all we know, like there was an interview where he was like, well, this is what I do in real life, so I just threw it in the game, you know, in the TV show, so it'd be easy.
He might be.
That's interesting. I never made that connection.
I've been meaning to get Kevin back on the show and interview him. This would be a good excuse. The release of Call of Duty.
Hopefully he does his imitations.
Frank Underwood. In the game as well. The game of politics is always
He actually, speaking of Star Wars, he did the great SNL Star Wars thing where it was like Walter Matthau as Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know that thing?
Walter Matthau! Only do there's no try.
What's a Wookiee?
He's a Wookiee.
What's a Chewbacca?
What's a Chewbacca?
It was just so awesome. He's just so great.
But it's clear Microsoft's pushing you towards digital content. You get 24 hours advanced play. I mean,
Microsoft does certain things around digital stuff. You know, Office 365 is another version where it just becomes a no brainer. Right. And obviously, there will always be people who just refuse to do that kind of thing.
For various reasons. Resale value, I don't have a fast enough internet connection, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. Do you have to put the same amount of content on your hard drive if you have the disk? Yes. It still has to copy to your hard drive.
I don't know how it just becomes a key. Xbox 360 was optional, so you could just play off the disk.
I don't think you can.
A little slower, remember?
Yeah, I don't think you can. Yeah,
I'm not sure about Xbox One.
I'm pretty sure you... it never gave me an option.
Okay. I mean, all I know is now I'm going to have to... Well, I've never used a disc. I have no idea how it works with a disc. If life goes right, I will never will.
I'm telling you, it's the end of physical media. Nobody believes me, but it's true.
Yep.
our show.
You'll
today.
Never stream a movie that looks as good as a Blu-ray.
Oh,
it
yeah.
It will never happen.
So who cares?
Yeah, who cares? Yeah, exactly. Right.
Looks right. good.
And
enough
I wasn't
to me.
In the recording studio with The Who either, but I still enjoy their music. So exactly. whatever. You know? It's like, whatever.
Whatevs. Back of the book coming up. Paul's going to attempt an Enterprise pick.
There you go.
And a beer pick.
Yep.
In memory of Mary Jo Foley.
In honor of her. Out of respect.
Out of respect. Our show today brought to you by lynda.com, the place to go to learn how to use software of all stripes. Office, of course. Windows, of course. They had a Windows 8.1 training videos up almost immediately. LYNDA.com. Just visit and browse around, and you will get a sense of the huge variety of training courses they have here. And these aren't just, you know, YouTube-style homemade videos. These are produced beautifully in their own studios. Look at this shot. I want to do this one. Shooting aerial panoramas with a quadcopter. That's a new course. Screencasting fundamentals. ArcGIS training. I mean, this is high fun, but high-end stuff and all sorts of stuff. LYNDA.com. And by the way, Microsoft completely covered by lynda.com. All of Microsoft Office, SharePoint, Azure, even developing apps for Windows devices. You could start learning right now at lynda.com. Not only are the courses high quality, they're broken up into pieces so you can easily learn what you want at your own pace. You could start to finish it, or you could just, you know, use the searchable transcripts and jump to the part you want. There are certificates of course completion you can publish to your LinkedIn profile. And whether you're beginner or advanced, there are courses for you at lynda.com. And, of course, there are apps for iOS and Android. I mean, you can learn on the go, too. The way it works, one low $25 fee gives you access to the entire library. They just launched an IT training category with 140 courses there. This is really impressive. But if you want to get the pro version, you also can download courses to watch them offline and project files so you can practice along with the instructor. Here's what we're going to do. 7 days free, just the run of the place. So you get a real sense of what you can learn from lynda.com. Here's a code clinic on C#. You want to update your programming skills. Some of the best instructors, many of whom I know, people like my good friend Bert Monroy. He teaches a great course called Dreamscapes about using Photoshop to paint fine art. LYNDA.com/windows, 7 days free. You can do anything you want. Watch as many videos as you can. Do not sleep during those 7 days. Just eat it up, my friend. 7 days free. LYNDA.com/windows. I think it's a great way to learn. Lynda.com. Just take a look at the vast number of courses in their library, and you'll see even business skills, negotiation, resume building, things like that. It's just great. Paul Thurrott, Leo Laporte, Mary Jo Foley has the week off. We are continuing on with what we call the back of the book. That's the best part. That's the part of the magazine I always read first. The juicy stuff, the tips, the picks. Your tip of the week starts us off, Paul.
Yeah, this is a little bit of a non sequitur. I think I'm going to build a PC.
Why?
I haven't done it in a long time.
I know it's fun, but
and I don't know if you remember last summer, I think it was, the PC I'm using now started to die and then eventually did die. And HP replaced the motherboard under warranty. It's still under warranty, I think actually it was a 2-year warranty on it, but it's starting to exhibit the traits that led to the problem before. And I don't know, I think I might build my next PC.
So just a recommendation?
Yeah.
And they're not an advertiser. I wish they were. We've been trying to get them for years. Newegg.com. You just start there. They got all the components.
Yeah. I think I'm going to go with like a shuttle kind of case.
Yep. They've got all those crazy cases.
Yep. So
you can big or small. So I like the shuttle cases.
I think I'm going to do
and
this.
And all the components you'd want. And it's really easy.
It's important that I be bleeding by the time this thing is over.
I think you will.
You know,
get that nice stamped metal case with the sharp, sharp edges.
I want to inhale that adhesive paste that you put on the CPU.
I love those volatile organic compounds. They just open up the sluices at both ends.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
I think if you do that, would you? We should do a little show around it.
Oh yeah, sure.
Wouldn't that be fun?
I mean, this is it's been a while, Leo.
I would find many others would follow along with you, and I think some of the most interesting parts of this are the research up front to figure out what you're going to put in.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I can tell you that whatever PC I get next time, I am getting some kind of a desktop. I really do rely on this kind of thing, and I do a lot of virtualization. I bet. In fact, I should probably just look before I say something stupid. But yeah, this thing, my computer only has 8 gigs of RAM in it. Right. Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, the next one's going to have like 32 gigs.
Yeah.
This is stupid.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is how bad it is. I will try to run a virtual machine now, and it will actually say you don't have enough RAM.
No, yeah, you need more.
And this is how I fix that problem. I close Chrome.
right.
Literally fixes the
problem.
That's
it. Just that. Yep. Yeah.
So I need like 16 gigs of RAM just to run Chrome.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, sorry.
No, I like that. And seriously, we could make it a really fun, special editions series.
Yeah, it would be like one of those reality shows where like this hick lives out in the woods and he's introduced to technology for the first time. And...
What's a computer? We'd like to show you.
Yeah, hey. The TV man is here.
We're going to build a computer.
I don't know what it is either.
As long as it has the internet on it, I'm in.
Right. Is it like Prodigy?
Yeah.
It is like Prodigy.
I know. I think you should do that. I'd love to. And at least you'll do a series of posts on it, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
So, tip of the week.
Just ground that up to a halt.
Just kind of, thinking out loud.
Yeah. So, tip of the week is Microsoft has... this is kind of a software pick, isn't it? So Microsoft has a new app for Windows and Windows Phone, meaning Windows 8, Windows Phone 8 Plus, called Music Deals. And so it's a way to get a $1.99 album a week, and then a bunch of albums for $1.99. Huh. And if you're still buying music, or even if you have a subscription service and this is just cheap enough, what the heck, add it to your collection. Obviously, there's no DRM these days. You can use this on any service you want, any device you want. They have this new app, and it's kind of a cool app. It works pretty well. So I actually did buy a couple of albums with this. And, someone had said, as we do in the Microsoft space, you get these people who are always burned by everything Microsoft does. And why isn't this just part of Xbox Music? Why would they have a separate app? Because actually when you buy the music, you actually buy it through Xbox Music. And I think I have the answer. It's a theory, but I think this is the answer. If they put this in Xbox Music, no one would ever see it.
You're right.
I don't think Xbox Music has a very good, brand or a very good, recognition or is not recognized by the public very well. So I think this is just, what the hell, it's called Music Deals. And it's something, who knows, this may appear, it may become part of Windows next time. So I think that's why. Anyway, it's a good deal. I bought this Fleetwood Mac album that has 32 songs on it for $2.
That is good.
Yeah, not
so
bad.
It's on the store for both Windows Phone and Windows.
Yep.
Cool. Music Deals.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
All right, so software pick, I guess I have a couple. One is that Office Mix was updated. And Office Mix is that awesome online utility that lets you take a presentation and then basically make a movie of it. And so, people can watch these things from afar over the internet, but also interact with them because they're interactive elements you can add to these presentations. And so this week they added three capabilities that are really interesting. One of them is not a big deal, gallery search. There's a gallery of pre-made presentations you can look through. So now you can search by different genres and so forth. But the other two are actually fairly profound. The first one is live mixing, which is the ability to provide a live presentation through Office Mix online, completely free to anybody that wants to do this. I mean, this is kind of an amazing capability. You can do things like, write on the screen if you have a pen-based system, and it will transmit across the internet to the people watching it and so forth, and obviously move through the slides and all that. And so that's cool. There's also improved editing functionality. And so in the way it worked before is that you would give the presentation once and you would just kind of rifle through it. Now what you can do is you can pause and resume as you're recording. You can go back in time, get rid of a part that you know, if you borked it too badly or whatever. And you can also write on the screen during the presentation and then erase it so that the screen becomes clear and you're looking at a slide or whatever, and then you can write some more and that kind of thing. And so, again, you know, just totally free tool. It's hosted by Microsoft. There's some amazing presentations up there. Just a really cool tool. And so that's kind of a nice update there. And the other one is, I just saw this as we were starting the show, and I haven't had a chance to look at it, but you may know that Nokia, the actual part of Nokia that's left as Nokia, is targeting iOS and Android now with their map solutions. And the initial version of Here, I think it's Here Maps for Android, was released only on Samsung devices recently. And I believe today, if I'm reading this quick, because again, we're just starting the show, but I believe they have now released it for Android generally. So if you have any Android device, I think you can get Android. I'm sorry, you can get Here Maps for Android as well. So you can check that out. I haven't seen it yet.
I am looking. I don't see. Is it say Microsoft? It must, or Nokia?
No. This is not Microsoft. This is literally Here. So, how would you find this? I have a link to the Nokia blog post.
Yeah, because I'm searching Google Store and I don't see.
Actually, what it says is you have to go to here.com/beta/Android.
Oh, it's a beta thing.
Yep. It actually does it go? Let me see what it does. This is actually a sideload. Yeah, it's like a APK.
So you're allowed to do that on Android. You could.
Yeah, I know.
But you have to check a box that says allow third party, and obviously this would be a safe one. It doesn't say any limitation in, like Samsung only. So
one of the big deals with the Here mapping applications, by the way, because you know a lot of people use Google or the Apple thing, and they're fine. You know, obviously the Google one is awesome.
That's Here the maps problem. I mean. Here, what do I need this?
Well, here's the big deal. So, and this is something we've been enjoying on Windows Phone for a couple of years now. Full offline maps. And so it's a little hokey. You can kind of do it in Google, but you have to be very specific about how you
do
it.
Right.
In Here Maps, you just say, I want all of Massachusetts downloaded to my phone. I want all of Spain downloaded to my phone or whatever. And then when you're offline, if you don't have an internet connection, or even if you do, you're not using your internet connection for the maps. It's offline.
That's for 100 different countries, and they also have traffic info. And in your experience, the public transport stuff is pretty good too.
So in my experience, the public transport stuff is great. That depends kind of on where you are too. Live traffic, you know, they seem a little behind on live traffic to me, but that's something that's gotten a lot better over time.
I'll have to try it. Google owns Waze, and I use Waze for the live traffic updates.
Yeah,
and then Google Maps, of course, has built-in nav.
Also, the reason that Here Maps and Here Drive Plus were such a big deal, are still such a big deal on Windows Phone, is that if you think about the way this market has gone, we have a lot of really low-end devices. And so you can spend $99 or less. You can get a 530, a 520, a 635, something like that. You could buy one of these things just as a secondary device.
Right.
You know, leave the SIM in, put it in airplane mode, turn on Wi-Fi. It's a media
GPS.
Player. It's a game player.
Yeah.
It's GPS. It's free.
Yeah.
Download offline maps, you know.
Yeah. That's pretty neat, yeah.
It's a neat thing. So, you know, maybe the situation isn't quite the same on Android, but I think the case for offline maps is a pretty good one. I'm sure Google will just add that feature, and that'll be the end of that. But that's one of the primary reasons to have it.
So, and I gather it's in the Samsung store. So
yeah,
that's
I didn't
how,
really pay attention to it when they made it Samsung only.
Samsung has its own store, of course.
Because, you know, the one that Google makes is too
so
nice.
So bad, yeah. We really need a... I've been looking for a Samsung.
Samsung store. Is... You know, they're like the guys that have, like, the little grudge going. Like, they sort of begrudgingly... Like, we have to use Android, and what we really want to do is be the whole widget. And the thing that I don't think they understand is that you're never going to be the whole... Nobody wants Samsung
People
OS.
People want Android.
Right. We're buying your phone because it's Android.
Right.
So just...
Well, so their Galaxy apps is taking a while to load. Once it loads, I'll...
See if it's in there. I bet it
Opera
is.
Opera Mini Browser. Mm-hmm. File Commander.
Nice. All the essentials.
iColor Studio. So that's the three big staff picks. Let's go to the exclusive. Yeah, our internet's so slow, it's not doing very well. But Oh, shoot. Just by opening it, I'm installing something. Milk Music.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Galaxy Gifts.
What would be funny is if they just had like off-brand versions of everything.
They kind of like do.
The Kindle ebook reader.
They kind of do.
The Audible audiobook reader.
They kind of do. Let me just see here. Oh, well, anyway.
Here is such a terrible brand because it's such
you can't
a
find it. Here Beta, yeah. But that's not the here. No, it's here Europe BV. Is that? All right.
That's it.
So that's how you find it if you're on a Samsung. I'll install it right now.
So, by the way, you know, I for whatever it's worth, I really like the presentation of the app, at least on Windows Phone. It's,
yeah.
And there is actually multiple apps. There's a Maps app. There's a navigation app called Drive Plus, which is fantastic. And then there's one just for public transport, which is really neat because it gives you, like, multiple legs through a trip. Like, I'm in Dedham. I need to get into this part of Boston. What's the best way? It's like, they take the bus for this part. You take this train. You take this train. They give you the whole route and, you know, how much each time, you know, how much time each leg is going to take. It's really well done.
Yeah, I was using something called City Mapper in London, which is awesome.
Yeah.
It's really a great transit app. But, I'm downloading here. I'll give it a shot on your recommendation. Now, you're going to channel Mary Jo Foley, aren't you, with an enterprise pick now?
Yeah. So this one's awesome because I was when I was briefed about this before it happened. This was a big part of the announcement in San Francisco this past week with Satya Nadella and so forth. Microsoft is offering a product through partners like they used to do for and probably still do for Windows Data Center. Which is the really Windows Server data center, sorry, the really high-end version of Windows Server, meaning that there's no way you can just, at the time, actually, I think data center now you can, but there was no way at the time to buy data center in a box. Like, you could only get it through a partner, and it was highly qualified systems and so forth. And so this thing is called Microsoft Cloud Platform, and basically what it is a way to bring Azure capabilities into your data center. So you can either do this on-prem solely, which is not typically the way enterprises would do it, or in a hybrid environment, right? And these are massive. People call it Azure in a box. That's true if the box is the size of my house, because these are massive, massive racks with incredible hardware capabilities. The one bit that I didn't know when I was briefed about this, because they literally wouldn't say, was the price. And so right now you can only buy a system from Dell. It's Windows Server 2012 R2, latest version of Windows Server, System Center 2012 R2. The Windows Azure Pack, which is the bit that brings the Azure capabilities in. These are systems that's like 32 CPU cores, 450 gigabytes of RAM, 6.5 terabytes of local SSD storage, 32 terabytes of total storage per virtual machine. They're insane. A basic server, a basic rack, I should say, you can have up to four racks, is 512 processor cores, 32 servers, 8 terabytes of RAM, 250 gigabytes per server, 282 terabytes of usable storage, right? All kinds of connectivity, et cetera, et cetera. Base price, $1.6 million.
Okay, I won't be buying that. Okay.
Yeah. So you can talk to your...
we got a big basement, but not a big wallet.
Yeah. You can strap four of these things together, and you can launch a missile at Mars. I don't know what you would... I don't know.
That's great. Well.
Yeah.
Thank you, Microsoft.
So I just thought that was kind of amazing. Interesting.
$1.6 million. Starting price.
Yep.
Code name of the week.
So this is interesting. I wish I could find this. It's killing me. I can't. Somehow in the past week, I came across a scan of something I had written, you know, in my own hand, right on a piece of paper from 1994.
Wow.
And it was... information about the Microsoft betas that I was participating in at the time. And so my Microsoft beta ID was at the top and my password, my CompuServe login. There were notes from a phone conversation we'd had with someone from Microsoft. And they were talking about the things that became Windows 95 and MSN, the online service, Office 95. You know, there was all this stuff. And then there was this word, and there was a word written there, and I thought, oh, my God, I remember this. What is this? And I asked Mary Jo if she remembered this, and actually she did, to her credit. The word was frosting.
That's a code and name, frosting?
It was a Microsoft code name in 1994, 95. And anyway, she remembered it. And it's the code name for what became Plus for Windows 95.
Oh.
Because Plus was the frosting on the Windows
95. Of course. I remember this too.
Yeah.
The frosting. Oh, yep. That's the Plus pack for Windows 95.
So the thing that kills me, I meant to insert the photo of this in notes. You could see it, and I don't remember where I was looking on the subject.
On the back of a napkin, he wrote the word frosting, and 20 years later.
Well, I had scanned in a bunch of my notes to get rid of the paper,
right,
you know,
right,
at some point, and I came across it somewhere in my server. I don't remember where it is now, but I'll find it.
That's hysterical. Frosting.
Yeah, frosting.
Finally, let's do some beer.
Yes, let's do some decidedly non-hoppy beer.
Yeah, so, your chance.
Although, to be fair, my favorite brewery is Blue Hills Brewery in Canton, next door to us here in Massachusetts. They do a lot of IPAs, a lot of kind of hoppy beers, but they're not that kind of awful hoppiness that I really hate. They do a really good job with it. In fact, they let us test a beer that they're not sure they're going to sell. It's basically a version of the beer they already do sell that's dry hopped. And when you bring it to your face, you can smell hops. You know what I mean? Like if a beer is too hoppy, you can smell it. And my first reaction was like, oh God, that's awful. And he said, no, drink it. And when you drink it, it doesn't taste hoppy. In fact, it's smoother than the normal beer that they sell. And I said, I don't understand how this works. And he says, the hops have oils in them, and that makes
it
smooth.
You said this last week. I remember you mentioned it.
Oh, I did.
This.
I'm sorry. Yeah. So I've already told you this. I was amazed by this. So anyway, I'm sorry. I just.
It's okay. So you're getting old, Paul, and I do the same thing. Yeah.
You're right. I did.
No.
Well, at least you're not. Now you know.
I was listening. I just want you to know I was listening.
So it wasn't just a story I made up.
Yeah.
But the pick I'm having this week is another local beer. This is a place called Pretty Things. And they're an interesting brewery because they don't actually have their own brewery facility. What they do is they design their own beers, but then they use other breweries around the area to actually make the beer.
Wow.
And
it's kind of like NVIDIA.
Yeah. It's,
or ARM.
Right.
They're a fabulous brewery.
Yeah, and they make a lot of great beers. Jack Doar is one of them, and a few others. But my favorite is Baby Tree, and Baby Tree is a kind of a Belgian Abbey-style quadruple, which should mean to you that it's kind of fruity and kind of heavy, kind of wintry, really smooth, really high in alcohol. Actually, it's not super high. I want to say it's 8-9%.
It's 9%, yeah.
9%, yeah. I mean, some of them are much worse than this, but this is a fantastic Belgian style
I
beer.
Want this beer. This looks great.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's got Pils, Vienna, chocolate malt, and oats.
Yeah.
Nice.
This would go really well on pancakes, for example.
if you run out of maple syrup, you got Baby Tree.
Put it on ice cream. It'd be a good intermezzo with some sherbet or something.
So this is Belgian style, but they make it in Ohio.
They're in Massachusetts.
Massachusetts.
Yep.
But it doesn't rhyme, Massachusetts, so.
Sorry.
When you said Canton, I thought home of the Football Hall of Fame, Canton, Ohio.
Sorry, Dedham is next to Canton.
Canton, Mass.
Yep. Dedham and Cant.
Cant and Canton.
Cant Town next door.
Cant Town. Canton. Mr. Paul Thurrott will be found playing pool at the local Dedham.
Well, nightery.
At least until Advanced Warfare comes out. You can find him at Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. His books, of course, are legend, and you can find links to many of them at windows81book.com, including his field guide to Windows 8.1. You also can find him here pretty much any Wednesday around 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. 1800 UTC.
That kid that graduated from high school and will never leave.
Never left. Mary Jo will be back next week?
Yeah, I would hope. Oh, yeah. So I believe she's going to be away next week, but she's going to do it from Barcelona.
Oh, fun.
If I'm not mistaken. I think that's what she's doing.
Oh, right. That'll be fun. All right, so we'll get a tech ed update.
Yeah.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, sir. Good to talk to you.
We do make on-demand video and audio available if you can't watch live. On our website, twit.tv/windows, you can also download it from any podcatcher, including the Xbox Music Store. Free! We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly!
Bye-bye.